welcome to this week's edition of This Week in U2 History. I'm your host, Eric Shivers. On this week's show, I will discuss the Rolling Stone article on U2 plotting their future and what my Facebook followers said in reply to my posting of this article. Also, I'll shed light on Barry Delaney's photography of U2 at Glastonbury. And of course, visit Gig of the Week. So sit back and enjoy the show. Welcome back to the show and Happy New Year. I hope your year's off to a great start. I love even-ending years, and I'm hoping 2012 will live up to all of its expectation. I was reading a posting recently on the web that there's not been very much U2 news floating around the ether. I tend to agree with the statement, but I sort of felt compelled to do a little snooping around Google on the internet. What I came up with was a great article on Rolling Stone about their hopes for what U2 is plotting in the future of 2012. I read it with, you know, a little bit of anticipation, and I posted on my Facebook page, I'm a U2 fan. The article posting drew one of my greatest responses on Facebook, as it was a sort of a no-holds-bar look at U2's recording legacy. Rolling Stone basically states that at the end of each decade, U2 produces a quote-unquote commercial disappointment. They cite Rattle and Hum for the 80s, Pop for the 90s, and recently No One on the Horizon from the early 2000s as their examples. I only agree with No Line on the Horizon as it really didn't push the band any further than the previous two records or anything in the last 20 years. Pop to me is absolutely brilliant with Staring at the Sun, Mofo, If You Wear That Velvet Dress, and there's some great other tunes. Rattle and Hum, hey, you know what? It's really from my early likings of the band, and I'm not going to have any argument with that. There are some gems in there as well. So I say the argument really doesn't hold water for what Rolling Stone is trying to make. However, I like it that Rolling Stone took the gloves off and spoke to U2's recording with a revolving door of producers over the past 2 years. The writer's perspective is that U2 is trying to compete with Lady Gaga, which they would lose to on a consistent basis because they don't push out hits like bands such as Gaga or any other singer-songwriter in that category. And B, you know, they're not really in direct competition unless we're speaking of radio, and even then it really doesn't matter because it's the fans who listen to the records. The other remark that made it clear in the article that some of the stuff that U2 does is a little overthought. And they hoped for the new year not to overthink the record that they're working on. And I agree, because over time, whatever they produce next will serve them well in the long run. Speaking of time, Rolling Stone's hope for 2012 and U2 is for the band to hang up the Warhorse tunes in their live performances and bring back others. I totally agree. I mean, if they brought back songs from, you know, even the smaller songs from Achtung Baby like Acrobat, which was never performed, and did a cover of it, and maybe funked up some other songs like The Refugee from their even further past and made them all different, I would love to go to the show. I think also to add to this idea that the band should start looking at smaller venue tour that sort of lacks the heavy production, sorry Willie Williams, but just sort of was more important about getting into the deeper cuts of the band. U2 could probably do 6 week on tour with like 3 nights in a row and then have 3 weeks off. They could cut out the hotel budget so that the tickets would not be as outrageous, and maybe some other amenities. Is that too much to hope for in 2012 from our band U2? I think not. As I stated in the opener, there really hasn't been too much U2 news floating around the ether. So for the last couple of days, I've sort of been digging through the web, and I found this great article on the Irish Independent. Actually, it was an interview with a photographer, Barry Delaney. He had the great opportunity this past summer to take photographs of U2 performing at Glastonbury last summer. Delaney speaks that he had not seen U2 perform in nearly 30 years, but he kind of knew how important Glastonbury would be to the band, and he really wanted to document this great event. As everyone knows, U2 was doing sort of a makeup date at Glastonbury while they were in the midst of their Juggernaut 360 tour here in the United States. I would probably call it one of the biggest one-off shows a band could probably do in a tour or a career. Delaney in the article discusses, in sort of broad terms, his history of shooting live performances and how the position of where the photographer is can be really critical in the pit to get that raw emotional feeling that the band is trying to portray to pretty much the back of the audience. He talks about others that bring ladders and long zoomed lenses, and he sort of refrains from that, using shorter focal lengths and wide angle lenses to sort of capture everything really, really up close without flattening out the image. On this night, we're speaking of the Glastonbury show, Barry was so close to the band that he could probably sense, and actually did sense, a fear in Bono's eyes. As some of you read in the press, Glastonbury wasn't really going to make the U2 highlight reel based upon their performance. The weather really hadn't cooperated, and Mother Nature soaked the entire field as well as the concert stage, turning that stage into basically a virtual ice rink. Members of the band, specifically Edge and Bono, were afraid to make one false move, and therefore they sort of stayed in place. It took away from that energy that we usually see at a U2 show and really sort of turned them into sort of tense and scared people, which Barry captured quite vividly in his photography. Barry makes mention about how U2 are real men and how they're sort of open to conversation and they're very approachable. In fact, he found that, you know, in his statements about 30 years ago when he saw the band in Dallas, Texas in 1982, which I would assume would be probably on the War Tour, maybe the October Tour. And he befriended them, and they were very open and very welcoming. But he sort of said that they're sort of unique and that other performers are not that kind. They sort of see the photographer as another extension of the media wanting a piece of them. And they sort of like wait for his film as soon as they end their show, and they sort of want it because there's sort of a capture of their performance. It's something that amazes me as I've shot live performances of concerts in my college days at the University of Iowa. But back then, you know, vanity and ego were not part of the biz. It was just a way to like get your face out there in the crowd. And because we didn't have the internet, that was really the only publicity a band really had other than a review, good or bad, about their record. So in hindsight, I would have to say, if you can find a chance to look this up, I actually posted on my Facebook page, I'm a U2 fan, to find this article. It's a little snippet, but it's a great article. And I would also read more about Barry's photography. You can go to Barry Delaney, that's BarryDelaney.ie, where you can see all of his work. He's got some great street work. He's got great concert work. He's got some photographs of Ireland. And you can also purchase his book, which is aptly titled Dim the Lights, The Show Must Start, which is basically a coffee table book of his photographs. So hopefully you get a chance to check out his website. If it's the third segment of the show, you know what time it is. It's time for Gig of the Week. And yes, this week I found one. January 1981, Belfast, Northern Ireland, Queen's University. If I'm talking about 1981, I'm talking about the Boy Tour. And this night, that set list was chock full of boy classics. U2 and Stiff Little Fingers happened to share the bill for a BBC Northern Ireland TV special. And as I understand, the band was on fire and full of explosive sparks because they had an audience and they were also being caught on TV and the other side of Ireland. What made this night so unique is that, as usual, Bono started his antics and started to jump into the audience doing a little crowd surfing. This would be nothing new. However, when he was returned back to the stage, he did a face plant, and thank God his nose still looks good, because I happened to witness one of those events almost 20 years later. It was the opening night of the Elevation Tour in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when he was performing at the End of the Heart with his pal Edge, doing a little Matador action at the end of Until the End of the World. As he returned back to the main stage, he actually fell off the Heart stage into the no man's land, and I thought that was Until the End of the World of the tour, and the following night we'd be seeing Edge, Larry, and Adam doing a little jazz trio covers of our favorite U2 songs. So that's Gig of the Week, January 1981, Belfast, Northern Ireland, Queen's University. Until next week, keep the needle in the Vonna grooves and keep on rocking. We'll see you later. Take care, folks.
You've been listening to This Week in U2 History, brought to you by 822design.com, a different kind of design firm. Eric Shivers is the author of I'm a Fan, How I Married U2 Into My Life Without Going to the Altar, available at Amazon.com. Read more about Eric's memoir at imauTwoFan.com and join the conversation. Tune in next week for more U2 history.